Welcome to another episode of the Citizen Bitcoin Podcast. I'm Brady, and I'm sharing my journey learning Bitcoin, hoping it makes yours a bit easier. All right, Bitcoiners, what is up? Hope you all are well out there. Today, I've got a kind of different episode for you. As most of you know, I attended the Bitcoin 2019 conference in San Francisco a couple weeks ago. And while I was there, I was able to grab some decent audio with a mobile recorder as I walked around the conference. Now, this audio has lots of background noise of varying degrees depending on where in the venue we were, but everything is audible and understandable. So go into this one imagining you're at Bitcoin 2019 having conversations in various corners with some great Bitcoiners. I talked to Jack Mallers, Bitcoin Tina, Lynn Ulbricht, Nick Ward from Layer 1 BTC, Robert Breedlove of Parallax Digital, Tai Kawamoto, Steve Jeffress, Terrence Yang, Gus Gigi from Ardalan.org, and Guy Swan and myself finish up this episode with a reasonably drunken conversation outside our Airbnb in San Francisco on the final night of the conference after Peter McCormick's kind of odd yet super fun dueling piano bar party. Hope you all enjoy this little audio tour of the Bitcoin 2019 conference. All right, here we go. All right, we'll start out with this clip of a conversation from the first morning of the conference, standing with a group of Bitcoiners on the rooftop of SVN West, the conference venue, waxing poetic about the scene and getting ready to start the conference. All right, here we are on the rooftop of Bitcoin 2019. We got a group from Raleigh. Raleigh, is it Raleigh or Raleigh?
Raleigh,
all right.
Yeah. Raleigh.
Yeah, what's going on? What's your Twitter handle, guys?
Bootstrap Bandit.
Bootstrap Bandit. And you have a paywall.link.
Yeah, we're on a Lightning service now. It's paywall.link. You can kind of payment protect your content with Lightning.
Right on, right on.
Yep.
Mine's just my name, Steve Jeffress. I'm just organizer of the Raleigh Bitcoin meetup.
Right on. Got
the crypto economy, Guy Swan. Actually, paywall.link, you got the crowd award last night for the Lightning thing, didn't you?
Crowd favorite.
Yeah. Crowd favorite.
No shit, that's awesome.
Yeah. The Blockchain Capital and Radar pitch competition.
Yeah.
That was pretty
Congrats,
cool.
Congrats, man.
That's
awesome.
Exciting. That was awesome.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I missed it.
That's baller.
Showed up after the show.
Yeah.
All right. Next to the right here.
Yeah.
This Both of you can jump on in.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit, okay. This is Tai Kawamoto representing the New York Citadel.
Terrence Yang at Yang Ventures.
Right on.
SF. All
right, so this is a beautiful spot right here. I mean, this is insane.
Spot.
It's absolutely, like, there's the moon right there. We got blue sky.
Describe that.
We got the vibe right now. You know, this is just too good, right?
Yeah,
the sun is shining.
What's Bitcoin?
Almost full moon. Bitcoin mooning.
Bitcoin mooning.
Yep, it's crazy. All right, so what are you guys going to check out today?
Well, I was going to ask you, how was that last night, hanging out with all the, like, podcasters, all the famous podcasters in the space?
Yeah, we had, that thing. Yeah.
Except for,
Guy.
Where were you? Except for Guy.
You were the guy came at the very last minute. I got here
and I asked where Brady was, and he was like, "Yeah, I'm at this beefsteak thing, and Pierre's here, and Stefan's here, and Matt, and everybody."
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You're just going through all these people. It's like, this is great. How do I get there? It's like, you can't.
Yeah,
you can't. It's sold out.
Sorry, dude.
Well, you know what? Somebody was like, if somebody took out that building, then like 90% of Bitcoin podcasts would be gone.
It would be just me.
I'd just you and Bitsteam would be the ones.
You'd inherit the Bitcoin podcast universe. No, that was cool though. You're putting a face with names. It's weird, you know. You get to know somebody's voice better than and then you get the full HD interaction with their real person. It's just kind of weird. Everybody went through that for about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And then we just kind of
just ate steaks.
Settled into a bunch of beef and a bunch of beer, and
Sweet.
Then the whiskey came out and the cigars, and it was
got pretty.
Then it was time for a lift.
I keep hearing about how great that beef was. Tommy said something about it like 16 times this morning. How about that beef last night, man? That steak.
Shit.
It was good. It's like, quit rubbing it in, man. Quit rubbing it in.
I'm kind of hungry. I'm waiting for these little
the
food
bobs?
Vendors over here to open up. They're still closed.
Oh, yeah, man.
Better have tacos.
It's kind of funny that there's a huge Bank of America building right next to us, right next to the
This conference. Is, yeah, this yeah, scene is amazing. Yeah. The moon is out, the sun is shining, blue sky, Bank of America right here, it's like in the shadows,
right.
It's like, it's
The sun is shining on Bitcoin, the Bitcoin moon, and hashtag, Bank of America looms behind us.
Hashtag made obsolete across the street.
Exactly. Exactly.
We're still at 11K, so number go up, right?
Number go up.
Yes. Number go up. Orange coin good.
Max Kaiser said that. Orange coin good.
Did he? Oh, shit. Yeah. That was like Stefan's little baby meme. You know, he's like shepherded it to full fruition. Now Max Kaiser like drops it at Bitcoin 2019.
That was originally like a Bcash or insult.
Yeah.
You know, oh, you guys only care about price. Number go up.
Yeah, right.
We just took it over. Like, yeah, number go up, bitch.
That's how you do it. That's how you do it, man. You
just take
it
back.
Just like we did with Maximalist. Yeah, just like we did with Maximalist.
That's Stefan LeBear's, the orange coin good.
Yeah, he's been shepherding it on Twitter, like, you know, using it a lot. There's been some great memes too, like Crypto Meme Central, you know, and
that guy's great.
He's prolific.
Yeah, man.
I then took some time to peruse the art scene at the conference, and a quick shout out here to Tommy, the designer of BTC Inc., who art designed and art directed this whole conference and did an amazing job. I appreciate the importance of art in the midst of a renaissance, and Tommy is doing great work. Two artists that really caught my eye at the conference. One was Greg Mike, at Greg Mike on Twitter, who painted a mural on the side of SVN West, and you can check out the sweet time lapse in the show notes of that mural painting. And then the augmented reality Bitcoin artist Gus Gustavo of Artelin.org, who I chatted with for a bit. Check it out. Yeah, so tell us your name.
My name is Gus Gustavo.
Gus Gustavo.
Yeah.
Is an artist, digital artist, and I'll put in the show notes a link to some photos and video of his augmented reality Bitcoin-themed artwork. It's beautiful stuff, man. How long have you been doing art?
Well, I've been doing art all my life. I consider myself like a natural illustrator.
Yeah.
But this platform in particular that we are building is called Art All In, O-L-I-N. We just started working on this last year, and we've been developing the tech.
Yeah,
and we
what
have.
You, what are you guys using to make it?
We're using several stuff. First of all, we created a Bitcoin wallet to create enhanced tokens with a counterparty protocol.
Okay.
So counterparty is basically a smart contract on the Bitcoin blockchain.
Right.
It's way earlier than Ethereum, but it's kind of the same idea.
Yeah.
It's a smart contract to create other stuff. Among those stuff is to craft tokens,
yep.
And then we, with our platform, we enhance those tokens to put art on those,
right.
To attach some digital file into the Bitcoin transaction.
Right, and so it basically labels that art as a unique,
exactly.
Like kind of like you would just write like one of 10 in the bottom of a print.
Exactly,
or something.
It's a way of creating digital scarcity out of memes,
yep.
Or artwork.
Yeah,
in general.
It's really cool, man.
Yeah.
And why are you using Bitcoin and not Ethereum or some other blockchain?
Well, because I started playing with this protocol before Ethereum was mainstream.
Okay.
So then it came CryptoKitties and brought a lot of attention,
yeah.
Right? But we believe that these protocols still have a lot of features.
Yep.
For instance, the tokens that we craft, they are more resilient and they don't have POS functions the way it happens with the 721 tokens on
right.
Ethereum. So we believe that although it's got some friction,
yeah.
Because of fees and everything that
sure.
we know, still, it's still a little bit better in some other sense.
Yeah.
So, but we are agnostic.
So it's just fees then to do like the initial commit for that piece of art to the blockchain. Do you like use Lightning for payments and stuff like when you're selling your art?
We're working on that.
Yeah.
There are some devs on the counterparty protocol trying to integrate the Lightning
gotcha.
To make it easier, but we are not there yet. So,
cool.
But I mean, I'm confident that we will be there pretty
yeah.
soon. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, does the fact that Bitcoin is, I don't know, I guess more decentralized than Ethereum or something like that,
Definitely.
Does that make a difference to you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As like a user of the blockchain?
Exactly. We believe in the idea of crypto collectibles the same way that it happened with regular collectibles in the prehistory of humankind.
Yes, right,
right,
of course.
Like people just start collecting stuff.
Right.
And we believe that we are making a bet on the most resilient blockchain
yep.
in the long run, a bet in the long run, because probably the tokens and the collectibles that we are crafting on the Bitcoin blockchain might have way more value in the long run.
Exactly.
Than compared to another blockchain that is not so decentralized, not so resilient, etc.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have a personal favorite? And maybe describe some of these pieces too.
Well,
I
think the Bitcoin banknote is pretty popular. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
That's the one that I made.
Right, okay.
But we have a lot like this.
It's got Dorian Nakamoto in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's got some great like eyebrow movements in the AR.
Exactly. Some movement. Yeah, I like that one. But there are some other great ones. This up and down is very simple, but it's very popular as well. And the private key, the fucking keys.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah, it's also really, it's hilarious. Keys. We like it.
It's fucking good. I love it. Uh-huh. Yeah, this is great, man. All right, I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brandy.
Yeah, man.
Nice to meet you.
All right, next up, I was able to catch Jack Mallers after his great talk on the big stage about an underappreciated outcome of the Lightning Network. It's very interesting. I also had a long, fun conversation with his dad and stepmom, Bill and Brooke, at the conference. We can thank Bill for being a longtime hodler and probably even more so for getting Jack and Brooke into Bitcoin. Brooke actually edited Andreas Antonopoulos' talks into the texts Internet of Money 1 and 2, which I think are foundational for understanding Bitcoin. And of course, Jack is leading design and development of Zap Wallet. An awesome family, awesome people. Here we go.
All right. I'm here with Jack Mallers.
Yo.
From Zap Wallet. I'm a user, a fan. Love the UI, UX, and just love like the vibe of the Zap community.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, man. He just came off stage here at Bitcoin 2019 and gave some like a fresh talk. Like this is new ideas that haven't been put out on the web yet, right? Physical settlement has gone from like cash like being settled by dudes in bars in the 1700s because their banks were too far apart from each other to instant settlement anywhere in the globe on Lightning Network. And that's really the miracle of Lightning Network. Can you like get into what this means? Like, I mean, it's kind of a mind-blowing thing. I hadn't thought about it this way.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, clearing and settlement in finance is a massive industry within itself, right?
Yeah.
The traditional eBay is the third party of commerce on the internet, right? There are clearinghouses and firms in the Federal Reserve that sit in the middle and broker, clear, and settle financial transactions anywhere between spending money, dollars between each other, or issuing bonds and trading options, right?
Right.
And the fact that there is a network that self-clears itself and it's instant and the contracts are binding to a blockchain that would back it is the most mind-bending thing I think of all. So although, I mean, dude, Zap is great. I love Zap. I love Lightning. I love everything that we spend it on, chickens and y'alls and whatever, right?
But man, I played some upstairs.
Yeah, fuck yeah, yeah. But from the a higher level, I mean, what this means to money, I mean, in the centuries to come, is if you can physically settle value in seconds and clear it instantly, then every value transfer needs to be on whatever can accomplish that. And so Lightning is a monumental advancement in money itself, and not even just for Bitcoin. And so, yeah, that's the point I try to get across. It's really crazy.
How big is this? How much of the financial industry is dedicated to settlement? Is it like most of it? Is that what the purpose is?
Yeah,
that's the purpose of the industry, right? So it's just massive amounts of middlemen to achieve final settlement. Like, what, I guess people might not understand too, like, okay, let's say I make like a transaction on my credit card or my debit card. How long does it take for that to actually settle with like wherever it ends up settling?
It depends, man. Days, sometimes soon, right? Well, if the Federal Reserve is clearing it, maybe soon, maybe days.
But that's because they're sort of like the route, right?
Right, maybe weeks.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, it's really what Lightning can mean to finance and value transfer. I mean, I'm going to speculate way longer than I'm alive, right? Like, this is a centuries-long project.
Yeah.
I was just talking, and from the 1700s and from the early 1900s, we're still seeing the same corporations clearing and settling finance. So with Lightning Network, if Lightning started, last year, 2 years ago, it's going to be around for the next 200 years.
Yeah.
Instantly settling value, cross-border, And what's amazing about it too is the legal binding is cryptographic. It's not through any nation governed state, right?
Yep.
So the barrier to entry to become a self-clearing participant in this network of finance is downloading free software.
Permissions.
And there is no financial legal barrier.
Yeah.
Right? It's all cryptographic and verifiable by our phones.
It's fucking awesome, man.
Yeah.
Anything you want to shout out about Zap? Like, what's the latest on Zap Wallet developments? What are you guys working on right now?
I got a bunch of stuff, but it's a little bit of a secret. But
fair enough.
Just keep your eyes open. Yeah, desktop, okay. iOS, Android, they'll all keep churning, keep getting better by the day. And then I got a major, major announcement probably within the next few months.
All right, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. Thanks, man.
Thanks,
buddy.
Your time.
Next, I talked with Nick Ward of Layer 1 BTC. Nick is a great Bitcoiner and designer who worked with me to develop the branding for this podcast, which I love. You can find some Citizen Bitcoin-inspired merch at layer1btc.com. Click on the collections link for the Citizen Bitcoin collection. Of course, wearing Bitcoin gear out and about in meet spaces, probably not the best OPSEC, but you can rock this stuff comfortably at Bitcoin conferences, meetups, or just wear it around the house and collect them as mementos from these early days. Not to mention, of course, it's a great way to support the pod. All right, here's my convo with Nick. All right, I'm here with Nick Ward from layer1btc.com. Designer, Bitcoiner. How you find the conference so far, man?
It's been great. It's nice to put some faces to all the names that you see on Twitter and, you know, on the internet, and finally get to talk to people in person. So that's probably the hardest part, is balancing getting what you want from the talks and seeing the panels you want to see, and then actually seeing the people you want to see and talking about what you need to talk about.
Yeah, you can't do it all at once. There's just so much going on. I was totally overwhelmed yesterday.
Yeah, it was tough, but, you know, luckily it's 2 days, and then we can, anyone that we didn't get day one, we can meet up now.
That's right. Like, we were trying to meet up yesterday.
Yeah.
But then I realized we don't need know what each other looks like very, very well. Like,
yeah.
My face is not out there on Twitter. I'm going to try to get out there a little bit more now. Since I'm totally doxing myself these days anyway. I feel like you have to go like either strict anon or like just all out, like public to protect yourself.
That was a decision for me that I feel like it was better like brand wise to put a face to it.
Right.
So people can connect like personally to it.
Yep.
So I made the decision to dox myself.
Yeah.
About, I think it was like 5-6 months ago. It's like, all right, well, I'll do a personal account attached to the business account, and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, I think you need both sides. You need people who are going to be like have public faces of Bitcoin as we're moving forward, and you need the anons too, because you know, it's this thing, like we just heard from Snowden, is about privacy in a lot of ways, and enabling privacy, giving privacy to the people.
Yeah, and you know, that's understandable. I mean, this is an industry that obviously values privacy, whereas most others do not.
Yeah,
right? It's not as important to, I guess, the majority of people, but for us it is.
And in fact, it's the opposite. Usually, like businesses, especially on the internet, that are going to make a lot of money, not having privacy is important to them. Like that's how they make money, is by doxing your ass.
Right.
You know?
Right. They'll charge you for their services, and if they don't, that means they're just taking more information from you, right?
Yeah.
Like you're the product if you're not paying. That's the whole idea.
How'd you get into Bitcoin?
So in 2014, my background is graphic design, web design. I was working on a project with a couple of web developers, and we had just a chat going together to work on the project. And I had heard about it and I had mentioned it, and one of them was able to give me a little bit of information on it. Nothing too in depth. But I've always been into like fantasy sports betting. You know, I've always had sort of a gambling mentality about myself, and I've always been interested in tech as well, so it was sort of like a convergence of those two things for me, and his brief level overview of what it is got me interested. So I had got in like 2014, I think it was around like 800 or so.
Yeah. To do sports betting?
No, not even. Just as a gamble in itself.
Got you, okay.
I was looking for quick gains, whatever it is, whatever it happens to be. You know, everything's digital.
Easy money.
These days. Yeah, exactly. You're all about easy money with the default Keynesian.
That's right. That's right.
So I had bought a couple in 2014, and I didn't really look into it, didn't really do any research about it, didn't really grok it, as people say now. But I wound up selling it like a year and a half or maybe 2 years later, probably about a year and a half later. And I was out of college. I'm paying off loans, stuff like that. I need money for other things right now.
Yeah.
So I had gotten rid of it at that point, and then I pretty much forgot about it for like a year, 2 years. And then 2016, 17 rolls around where we have the insane Ethereum pump and the alt market. And,
yeah.
You know, I was all in there. I had a portfolio of like 30 plus coins and stuff like that.
But oh, man.
It got ugly. Yeah. And then, things pop, right? The bubble pops, everything starts going down, and I'm curious, right? I'm like, why is this happening? Looking for answers. And that sort of leads you to like the only real sources of credible information and actual concrete concepts.
Yep.
Brings you back to Bitcoin. Like they say, all roads lead back to Bitcoin.
Yep.
That's what happened for me. Like when I'm looking for foundational truths and ideas that stand the test of time, it all brought me back to Bitcoin.
Yeah, there's a massive foundation of understanding what Bitcoin is and understanding what's going on. Mm-hmm. A lot of people you can learn from out there that are super smart, have thought about this a lot, and have figured out how to communicate that. And then when you look at the alts, it's lots of fancy marketing, great design, which I appreciate, yeah. But it's really flashy. But when you start digging, especially after a bubble pops something, you're like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
The substance is not there. The substance is there with Bitcoin.
Everything sort of becomes more clear.
Yeah.
You know, in the bear market, it's kind of nice because like you're not getting bombarded with all these things that sort of like cloud your vision.
Right.
It's like you're driving a car and like in a crazy boom like we had with the alt cycle in like 2016, 17, it's like driving a car and like there's fog, there's rain, you can't see anything, your lights aren't working on your car, and you're trying to drive down a highway at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And you know the market's not stopping for anything. You have to go, right?
Yeah.
The bear market comes. Skies clear up, there's no more rain,
yep.
The windshield wipers start working again,
right.
You're driving on the road and there's nobody ahead of you, and you're just like, oh, this makes sense now, I can see what the heck's going on. So
yeah, man.
That's sort of what it felt like to me.
Yeah, and here we are now, it's this fucking thing's been pumping like crazy.
Yeah.
The past week it's gone up $3,000 and like that, we're up 13,500. I've been talking to Bitcoin Tina a lot here.
Oh yeah.
He's probably the perfect one to talk to. But like, I just keep thinking about him because, you know, he's been saying during this whole bear market, like, you guys have no idea. You're all wrong trying to compare the 2014, 15, 16 cycle to this one. Everything's different now. This is an exponential technology. Built on exponential technologies, like he always says, it's going to, you know, fucking rip your face off when it starts going. And here we, here we are. So
Even what's happening now, it's crazy, but... If you were to ask him, I'm pretty sure he would say, yeah, no, this isn't it.
Yeah.
It's going to get...
Even crazier.
Yeah, like 100x crazier than this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's, you know, he's talking exponential on top of exponential. And I was looking at some, like, research of, like, S-curve adoption for, like, new technologies and stuff like that. And I was looking at it, and I was seeing, like, the patterns of the S-curves and stuff like that. So what it sort of seems like to me is, like, the hype cycles that Bitcoin goes through, like, every couple of years, somewhat aligned with happenings, right?
Yeah.
What was interesting is it seems like we have S-curves on top of S-curves on top of S-curves.
Right.
And that's sort of just how Bitcoin works.
Each
right?
cycle is kind of like an S-curve on top of an S-curve.
Right. It just hires the foundational price support, basically.
Yep.
Right. So you increase the number of holders, and that increases the baseline of whatever the next S-curve will look like.
Yep, yep. It's pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Thanks.
I then had the privilege of talking with Lynn Ulbricht, who was there to share about the incredible injustice inflicted upon her son by the federal government. People with very directly equivalent convictions, even other Silk Road convicts, received no more than a 10-year sentence. Ross received 2 lifetimes plus 40 years. It's a travesty, and it was an honor to speak with Lynn, a parent who has endured this tragedy, and to witness her strong voice in standing up to this injustice. All right, I'm here with Lynn Ulbricht, Ross's mother, and she just gave a very moving speech about Ross and read a letter that Ross wrote for Bitcoin 2019 conference attendees. And you know, this is a story I think that strikes to the heart of a lot of Bitcoiners. And I just want to say, on a personal level, you know, I'd love for you to pass on to Ross that. We're all pulling for him, and we will continue to work and stick with you guys through the fight. Could you go over some of the points you made in your talk about how unfairly Ross has been treated?
Well, I mean, there's, and it really impacts all of us. I mean, the sentence itself is a horrible precedent for excessive sentencing in this country, and it's also cruel and unusual punishment, which is a violation of the Eighth Amendment. But there, I mentioned how the judge referenced Ross's philosophy at sentencing. That's a First Amendment problem, okay? Yeah. We're allowed to have a philosophy, and you don't get sent to prison for life before a philosophy in this country.
Right.
Or you're not supposed to at any rate. And there's other violations which are on our website of the Constitution, such as the Fourth Amendment and the Sixth Amendment and the Fifth Amendment. And there's just a lot of problems with this case, and of course that puts all of us in peril. Ross didn't get a fair trial. To give a life sentence to a first-time young offender who has no criminal record, no violence whatsoever, double life plus 40 years without parole, this is abominable. And it really is a frightening thing that this could happen in our country.
Yeah, and you had a great graphic up there during your talk comparing Ross's sentence, which is, you know, double life plus 40 years, as you just said, insane, compared to similar, you know, convictions. And there was no sentence that was less than 10 years.
More than 10 years.
Or, sorry, no sentence more than 10 years.
Yeah, that's right. And these are people involved with the Silk Road. And then you can get out into cartel leaders. Even terrorists get less sentences than Ross. Kidnappers, murderers. So, I mean, hello?
Yeah.
You know, are we safer for this? No, Ross is not a danger to anyone.
Right.
We have over 175,000 signers on our petition. Please sign it if you haven't already, because we need more. And we have nearly 100, I should say, eminent people, individuals, and organizations saying, no, this is wrong. And we just need to speak out because, for all of us, and for the people who are in prison being sentenced very drastically, like Ross. We want this to really help everyone and to get him out and to make changes, because this is not American. This is not our values. This is like a totalitarian state.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Yeah.
I spent some quality time with Bitcoin Tina at the conference. It was great to meet him. He was at the Rooftop Beefsteak the first night, and we had many conversations those few days. I got him to sit down with me and get some audio of his take that as an exponential technology built on exponential technologies, Bitcoin adoption will happen a lot faster than most of us think. Here we go. I was really excited to meet this guy, all right? He gets me hyped up on Twitter, and I think he's got a great perspective on where Bitcoin's going, one that is, I think, underappreciated. And I am coming around to believing, and boy, it's making this run that we're on right now is sort of reinforcing this guy's ideas. This is another of the Bitcoin Tina. Welcome to the show. What's
hey,
up, man?
Hey, Brady. How you doing?
Good, man.
This is an awesome conference. We're at Bitcoin 2019 in San Francisco. And the guys from BTC Media put on an amazing conference.
Oh, yeah,
here.
They're killing it.
And I really love this conference. And I want to make a shout out to all the guys from BTC Media and thank them so very much. We've had a really great time here. And they put on a really impressive, really wonderful conference. And I'm so appreciative. There's one guy in particular who I want a special shout out to, CK Snarks, who was such a great guy, took such good care of me, and I'm so appreciative. He's a really, really, really good guy. And
yeah, how about that beefsteak that CK hosted on top of his roof?
That's what
man,
I'm talking about.
Right?
That's what I'm talking about. CK hosted it great, but he just got everything, you know, he just helped me make everything easy. No, he made everything easy. He's a great guy, and yep. I really like him, and I think he's a smart guy, and I'm very appreciative.
He works for BTC Media, and you can check out his podcast, POV Crypto, if you're into it. It's a good one. All right. We got that shout out in. So give it to us. Let's hear what you're thinking on this current price run-up, and where are we headed in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years?
Okay, well.
And why is price important?
Sorry.
That's cool.
I spoke with Marty Bent from Tales from the Crypt in January.
Great episode. Legendary.
And I'll be honest that when the market, you know, it's a bad bear market. Everybody knows it was a bad bear market in 2019. Actually, it used to be 2018. And the market broke from 6 to 3. I was like, oh my God, you're down like 70%. And it gets cut in half in like 2 weeks. I was pretty sure that looked like the end of a bear market to me. It looked like a liquidation. I've been trading for a lot of years, and I was pretty convinced there was a high likelihood, although there were plenty of guys who were saying, oh my God, we're going to go to much lower levels. And I thought that was actually a little insane. But, you know, I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. My crystal ball broke, like, in 2017. So I don't know what it's going to do, but I thought it was super cheap. I mean, I think Bitcoin today is worth a minimum of the value of gold. I think even without further development, it's worth the value of gold based just simply on its value proposition and what it can do. Look, if you're a businessman, if you're an attorney, if you're a doctor, if you're whoever, for some reason, you know, if something happens, not even your own fault, something happens and the government comes after you, and they freeze all your accounts, what are you going to do? Who are you going to go to get help to pay for your lawyer? I mean, just on that value proposition alone, I mean, we live in such a litigious society that lots of people should own some Bitcoin, you know. And it's not just them. I mean, there's lots of people, lots of men, lots of women, lots of people who should own it. Just having money that they can control. And that's a really big deal. I think that price is the primary means of adoption of Bitcoin. I think most people don't understand it. I started looking at it in like late spring, early summer of 2017. Put a lot of time into it, starting to work on it. I didn't buy my first Bitcoin. I first heard about it, as I mentioned previously, in like 2014. Okay. From Trace Mayer at a conference, but had basically kind of forgotten about it. I was really intrigued by it. So like most people, I'm like most people's story. They get sort of a first contact with Bitcoin, and then they like forget about it. Except for a few smart guys, like Max Kaiser said he.
Yeah, right.
He like bought it right away.
Got it.
Well, Max is smart. He's smarter than me because he owns it at really low prices. Really low prices. Although I probably, if I bought it, I would have sold it a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Like most other people, I think, have done. They bought it and they thought, oh my God, I made $5.
I tripled my money. Let me get out.
And they missed the next 4,000 times.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay, well, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. And so it takes time to really learn and understand it. And I've come to a lot of different understandings over the time in that period from 6 to 3,000 when it's feeling pretty awful, actually. Because it was hard mentally just dealing with a market drop like that. Because really severe market drop. You know, I bought some Bitcoin at like $19,000, $16,000.
Yeah, that starts hurting. That's some pain you start feeling
it's,
right there.
You know, losing like 80% of your money, whatever the hell it was. I don't know. It was a lot. You know, that's really hard to stomach. But I really believed in it. But it's still hard to stomach because it's a pretty substantial loss. But I held on, I hodled through. And I started to understand that extreme bull and extreme bear markets are the nature of Bitcoin. And then I had seen some interesting stuff from guys named Peter Diamantis and Ray Kurzweil from Singularity University explaining and talking about the nature of exponential technologies.
Yep.
And I started to understand that, you know, the internet's an exponential technology, and Bitcoin and its ecosystem are exponential technologies built on top of an exponential technology, plus the added fact of a fixed supply, which tends to create a positive feedback loop, because there's just not, you know, when the price goes up, you can't just add more into the marketplace
right.
to kind of satiate that demand. So there's just so much to go around. And so in order to have more Bitcoin, there's enough Bitcoin for everybody, there's just not enough Bitcoin for everybody at a given price. So I was thinking today, in San Fran, I got sunburned yesterday. I'm standing outside in the sun, and I'm standing outside. It's really crazy. My back is on fire, and my chest is freezing. San Fran has some freaky weather, and this is really a beautiful city. I mean, this is Northern California. It is one of the most beautiful places on the planet. And I remember we flew in and saw those hills and saw how beautiful it was. We were driving to the airport, looking at South San Francisco and the hills, and said, oh my God, it is so freaking beautiful. This is such a beautiful country. there's so many beautiful spots in the United States of America, and I really love this place so much. And I was like, wow, this is really beautiful. And we get into San Fran, and I remember the Mark Twain joke. I mean, everybody knows this joke. The coldest winter I spent was the summer in San Francisco. And I brought a fleece, and I'm wearing a short sleeve shirt, and I'm standing outside because, you know, I want to hear the presentations, but I'm pretty sure those are going to be on YouTube, and I'm going to watch them all on YouTube. But I want to meet people, and yeah. I meet people, talk to guys like Brady, because I don't get a chance to meet these people in person, and I don't want to miss that opportunity. I mean, really getting to meet people in person is such a treat. It's just really, I'm really privileged to be able to meet guys like Brady.
It's been spectacular, man.
I've talked to so many smart people. There's so many really, really, I mean, I'm an old man, and there's so many young guys who are so fucking smart.
Something that's impressed me.
You're going to have to bleep that out.
That's okay. You can say fucking on this podcast.
They're really smart.
Yeah, something that really got me is, like, everyone I've met is really, really fucking toxic. Just really really fucking mean assholes.
No, they're not
they're
mean.
All assholes.
No, they're great.
No, man,
guys.
Like everyone
not
I've met has been
one.
Everyone I've met has been so nice. Oh my god, Pierre Rochard is like the nicest person I've ever met in my life.
Pierre is awesome.
Dude,
I love Pierre.
Pierre is like super kind dude, and like everybody's been that way. Everyone's been really cool. And yeah, it's just, yeah, funny.
The podcast fraternity is like amazing. Like I love these guys. They're all, they could all be like the age of my son if I had a son. But, you know, I'm an old guy. But they're great. They're great. And I love their outlook on the world. I love their energy. I love their enthusiasm. They're smart guys. They're really, really smart. And I love that. And I said on Marty's podcast, it's this that fills me with so much optimism, because the energy that these guys bring, and my goal for myself is to try to have some ideas and maybe influence through the things I say and the things I tweet to get other people to pick up on my ideas and broadcast them and make them bigger and start to understand the world the way I understand it, which is why I want to do this pod with Brady.
Yeah, so you were saying earlier that all right, so we've got exponential technology on top of exponential technology. And you were saying earlier that you were taking a walk this morning and something made you realize that you wanted to get this, you know, get this story out there, get this idea out there and put it out there. You think that this is going to happen way faster than most people do.
I think it's going to happen much faster than most people think, because I think you're building, you know, an exponential technology on top of an exponential technology. The internet, smartphones, these are all exponential technologies, but they took time to develop because we had to wait for hardware, we had to wait for telecommunications development, for speed, and we were still waiting for that, like 5G.
I mean, the internet was developed in like the late 50s, early 60s, the original internet, the ARPANET, and then we didn't get the web, the user version, the user-friendly version of the internet until the mid-90s. That was 30 years, and then in the past 20 years, we've gone from the web has taken over the world, and then we got the mobile revolution that's taken over the world. So everything started happening faster and faster. And like you say, Bitcoin is technology that's going to be able to leverage all of that technological development because it can instantly be used all over the world since it's built on top of the internet. It's going to be a lot shorter than the 50 years it took for the internet to ramp up from the, you know, ARPANET to where it is today, right?
I agree with that. I think it's going to happen much, much faster, and the design of this thing, price is 99% of adoption. People come to it because they're attracted by price. Everybody loves to make money, and money is the thing which has a universal preference. You require specific preference for everything but money, and Bitcoin's the best money ever created. And I don't want to go into that whole discussion of money right now, but let's just talk about money itself for a second. I don't need a specific preference for money. Everybody knows they want money because money buys everything else. Money buys goods and services. Money buys investments. I need a specific preference for stocks or real estate or art or old cars or other kinds of collectibles or gold or whatever. You know, if I want to buy, you know, a particular pair of pants or a particular pair of shoes, a shirt, everything requires specific preference, those things that you want in particular. Money's not that. Money, everybody wants money because money buys everything else. And money, a good money, is by its nature a riskless asset. What does that mean? It means that if it's a money which is fixed supply, then it doesn't have the specific risk that all these other things have. If it's a good money like Bitcoin that has a fixed supply, and let's not go into the whole details of Bitcoin right now. This is just a little brief conversation.
Are you surprised by this run-up that we're at 13.7 now?
Yeah, I am surprised.
Yeah?
I think that when I was talking to Marty in January, I was busy trying to figure out, okay, do I have enough cash to make it work? And I kind of thought so. I was looking, you know, well, maybe we'll get to 20,000 by the end of 2020, the worst-case scenario. All these doom and gloom bears, I mean, they could be right. I can't deny that they, you know, might not be right. They could be right. I think they were going to be right, but I was pretty confident that the bear market ended for sure. I think the bear market ended in December, and then we were kind of finding a bottom. And I knew for sure that the bear market ended, well, two things. I was pretty sure the bear market ended when we made a higher high and a higher low in Bitcoin. And I figured exactly when that was. That was sometime, I think, in March.
Yep.
And then I think like April 2nd, we exploded higher by 1,000 points. And then I was absolutely certain the bear market had ended. And you had to, if you had gotten out of it, if you'd been scared out by the guys trying to scare you out, you better act fast because this thing could move very fast. And I argue that all surprises are on the upside, that as people's understandings change about Bitcoin, they decide that they want to own it and they need to own it. And in time, there'll be times in the future, we're not there yet, and it may not even be this cycle, but it could be next cycle, where people will start to say, sell my Bitcoin, what, to buy dollars? I don't want to buy fiat. I don't want to own fiat. I might want to buy stuff with it. I might want to buy a nice something or other with it. Whatever that something or other is, depending on what I can afford. But
and then people are going to start saying, I don't want to get paid in fiat.
That's true.
And that's when things really start turning around because...
That's true. But that maybe, that's, I don't know how long that'd be. That could be further out.
Yeah.
But I was thinking back because I started to tell the story about getting sunburned yesterday.
Yeah, right.
So I got sunburned and I was bright red from getting the burn. I said, I better get myself some sunscreen. And I was going to walk, which the hills are pretty steep in San Francisco. So I looked on the app, and I found a Walgreens. And then I tried to play around with my app to, you know, figure out how to walk there. And, like, my phone's not working. I was like, what the hell is, what's wrong with this thing? And I turned off, like, every location service that I have because, you know, I don't want the big G chasing me.
Yeah, that's tracking just, that's everything just that I good
do. Yeah.
Only turn on that location services when you absolutely need it. Make sure you turn it off.
So yeah, it actually is too complicated to turn everything on and turn everything off. I couldn't figure out what it was. I finally figured it out. It's just, I'm sure if my kid was there, she'd gotten it all fixed for me in like 15 seconds. It took me like 5 minutes. But I was thinking back to the late 90s, and I don't remember when exactly. Don't hold me to this. You know, it could have been 96, 97, could have been 98, 99. I don't remember what it was, but I remember when they first started talking about mobile, and there was some map company that was going to do something spectacular or special. And, you know, we hadn't had that. I don't remember if smartphones had come out yet or were just kind of in that transitional stage from whatever was before smartphones. What did they call those?
Feature phones or something like that?
I don't know what they called them. What do they call phones before
phones,
the smartphones?
Cell phones.
Cell phones.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they called it. But I say to myself, wow, I mean, look at this. Look at all this stuff we don't think about. We just take for granted. I saw this happen. I mean, I take it for granted now, too. But guys like Brady, who are half my age, they're born into this. You know, they started using this stuff when it's around. So they didn't remember a world that didn't have it. And well, I have an advantage of perspective that a lot of people don't have because I think I have a pretty deep understanding of the economic aspect of Bitcoin. I mean, I don't understand the technical aspect. I mean, people explain stuff to me. I had a wonderful conversation with a guy today who was explaining some stuff to me. It was very interesting. But I'm not an expert in that. I have some understanding, some knowledge. But it's just so important. You know, you look back and we take the stuff with the mapping so for granted. And there are a lot of things with Bitcoin that we're not there yet. You're still in that stage when I first heard about that company that was doing this thing potentially with maps and people getting excited about what was going to happen with mobile. But this go-round is going to go much, much faster than that because we're still waiting for a lot of things. There was a lot of hardware stuff and a lot of phone stuff that still had yet to be developed. This is just software, and this is going to go much, much, much faster because the hardware infrastructure is already built out.
Right.
And it just reminded me of the nature of an exponential technology and how quickly this stuff's going to be and how we might lose perspective on how fast things really are. I talked to a kid on DM, and I felt really bad about this kid. I had spoken with him on DM'd him on Twitter sometime during the, you know, during that bottoming phase, and it was pretty brutal. I don't remember what I talked about with him then, but I was trying to give him my opinion on how fast things were going. Somebody convinced this guy to sell a lot of his Bitcoin. And he wanted, in my opinion, why I thought bear markets were going to be shorter in the future. And I started talking to him. And so in the process of talking to him, I said, so you still have your Bitcoin, right? He said, I have some. I said, what do you mean you have some? He says, I mostly cash. I said, you got to be kidding me. He said, you're mostly cash? You only have some? What price did you sell this at? He said, oh, right around here. And this was like June 1st. He said, you sold it right around here? And he said, yeah. And I didn't really actually believe the kid that he said this. He's like a 20-year-old kid. I didn't really believe him. I thought it's just like a face-saving kind of thing.
Yeah.
He said, you know, still in the bear market. I said, what bear market? It's 8,600. What are you talking about? We're not in a bear market. We haven't been in a bear market for months. I said, we're in a rip-snorting bull market. It's huge. And just from June 1st, now, I don't know if we're going to stay here or not. I mean, right now, look at the price.
Oh, yeah. Today's candle is insane.
We were higher. We're 12,470-something right now. We're higher. We're like 12,800 maybe. But
no, we're at 13,800.
Oh, we are? Is that wrong?
Yeah,
that was high.
12,400 was the bottom for today.
Are you sure? No, we just had a bit.
The red candle came finally.
Yeah, just
there you go.
Just puked.
Gotcha.
That's all right.
That was coming. Yeah.
Yeah. No, we'll see what happens, but that's okay. Went to 13,000. I can't remember where we went, but
13,800.
13,800. You're
and
right.
Then,
you're
and
right.
Then puked.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. It needs to happen. It just has to happen.
Yeah.
And that's all right. We went lower. We went to 11,675. But you got to get those weak hands out. You got to drive them out, and they'll sell. And the fiat maximalists, the traders, you don't want to be a fiat maximalist. You're going to lose big in the long run. Don't measure your wealth that way. It's going to be a mistake. And I know you guys, you think you're so freaking smart. You think you know better. That's okay.
You don't know better.
You'll own less Bitcoin in the long run. I promise you, you'll own much less Bitcoin. You say, oh, yeah, I'm going to make Bitcoin. I'm going to make a lot more Bitcoin.
And you'll actually be able to enjoy your life.
You're going to make much less Bitcoin. But I know you think you're better and you're smart, but you're not that much better and you're not that smart. You're not Paul Tudor Jones. You're not Stanley Druckenmiller. You're not the world's best trader. I promise you that. Maybe one or two of you out there are, but honestly, I doubt it. And so this kid, he sold a bunch of his Bitcoin. And he never, I don't know what he did if he bought it back. I said, well, you still have a chance to buy it back. And he was pretty negative about the nature of the market, convinced that somebody told him, we're going lower, so we're going to go lower. And I would recommend, like what the guys on, I'm guessing Brady says it too, probably everybody says it, Stacks, it's just stack sats. Don't try to be, but I love stacking sats.
Me too, stacking sats is
great. It's hard to know the right price to pay, and maybe, you know, if you had a chunk of money, you know, maybe you should put the chunk in. I'm not saying you should or shouldn't. because I don't know what the right price is to buy at. I don't know where it's going today or tomorrow or the next day.
The main point is, you know, hold on to it for a long time.
But
see
a lot
it as
of people,
a 5-10 year investment.
A lot of people also have to, you know, they have to buy it a little bit at a time. It depends what their financial circumstances are.
And, of course,
and particularly younger people who are earning money as they go. So, look, you can be more aggressive at, you know, age of 25 than a guy who is in his 50s or 60s or 70s. And so maybe you can handle a bigger position in Bitcoin. You can buy a little less of something and, you know, give up something, and that may make a big incremental difference in what you're able to do. But there are a lot of things you can do. You're earning an income. If you feel that you have a relatively secure income situation with your job and what you're making, then you can be more aggressive. Then if you're concerned about it, you should be less aggressive, because you do have to worry about what your needs are financially. I mean, you can't be stupid about this.
Yeah.
You want to be a strong hand, and be a strong hand means you have to be smart. You shouldn't lever, in my opinion. You shouldn't margin yourself.
Yeah, being overextended makes you weak.
It makes you weak.
Yeah.
And
makes you vulnerable.
I think the size of this is going to go to levels that are really shocking.
And it's going to fuck with your head.
Well, it will, but I think we go to $20 to $50 million of Bitcoin in 15 to 30 years, possibly faster, possibly bigger. I don't really know, but as I think about it...
$20 to $50 million in today's valuation.
In today's valuation.
It's amazing.
As it absorbs the store of value that... You know, money is the riskless asset,
right?
And a good money that it'll appreciate as global production increases over time, and that value goes into money. Some of it goes to labor, some of it goes to investment, but some of it will go to the general price level of money as priced in real goods and services.
Right, and there's store of value, like monetary premium, in other assets now too, like real estate.
And it'll come out of those
things. Come out of those things, yeah.
You'll have business risk, you'll have business innovation and risk exposure in assets like real estate and companies and stock, equities. But I don't think you'll have the store of value. I don't think you'll be searching for where do I want to put... what I want to save. You might want to make an investment, but it'll change the whole nature of the financial landscape. I think we're in an emerging economic paradigm. And I tell this to most people, and a lot of people who think they're sophisticated financially. I'm pretty sophisticated financially. I mean, I may be less so than some, more so than others, but I have pretty good education, and I've traded and looked at markets and done a fair bit of reading over the last 35 years. And so, you know, wise guys might like say, oh, what's your education? Well, really, it doesn't matter what my education was. I've done a lot of work on it. And you don't have to listen to me or agree with me. So if you don't like what I say, just tune me out and turn me off. I mean, I don't really care. You don't have to listen to me.
Yeah.
I might not listen to you. And it doesn't make a difference. It's all about trying to learn what you can. For me...
I've got to go record with Francis Pouliot in 3 minutes.
Okay, for me, if I can't...
Let's hear the wrap-up.
Absolutely. If I can't make sense of something, if I can't explain something that makes sense to me, there's a good chance it's wrong. It has to make sense. It has to sound right. It has to have some common sense to it and be something that... When I explained it to somebody, he said, you know, that makes sense. I like that idea. The best ideas are not really complicated. The best ideas are pretty simple. And I think that my views on it are probably right. It doesn't mean that it's a map or a roadmap for trading. It's not. But it's broad strokes of what I'm thinking, and I think it's going to go a lot higher. And I think that this coming bull cycle is going to surprise an awful lot of people.
Yep.
And I don't know where it goes to, but I think it's got to hit some pretty big numbers and pretty shocking numbers. And I continue to believe all surprises are on the upside.
Thanks so much, Tina. Appreciate you, man.
I also met Robert Breedlove, CEO of Parallax Digital, at the Beefsteak, and chatted with him throughout the conference. Robert has a great mind, has produced some epic Bitcoin Twitter threads, one of which you're going to hear about now, that gets into the fundamentals of the Bitcoin protocol. here's my conversation with Robert. All right, last one for Bitcoin 2019, guys. I'm sitting here with Robert Breedlove, founder, CEO of Parallax Digital. Met Robert Monday night on the rooftop, the beefsteak. Got to have a nice chat with him. Robert, tell us what Parallax Digital does.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man.
So Parallax Digital operates some crypto asset hedge funds.
Okay.
And then we're also working on a digital security advisory practice. So trying to navigate and figure out the digital security space.
Right on.
That we think could be a big deal over the next decade or so.
And where are you guys based?
Based in Santa Monica.
Okay.
And we also have an office in Istanbul, Turkey.
Very nice.
Yeah.
All right, man. You have produced some epic threads on Twitter.
Thank you.
So you got to follow Robert on Twitter. What's your handle at? Is that Robert Breedlove?
Yeah, so my last name is Breedlove. That's Breedlove, love. My handle's at Breedlove22.
All right. So yeah, follow Robert for some amazing tweet threads. He posted one about a week ago heading into the conference, and I thought we could run through that real quick. Kind of get the Reader's Digest condensed version, and of course I'll link to it in the show notes.
Awesome. Yeah. I guess so. The inspiration behind the thread was I think there's a lot of jargon in the space, which tends to kind of make us a bit insular at times.
Yeah.
Outside world doesn't know what we're talking about. We look like crazies. And it just seems to me like that we should kind of take it upon ourselves to speak the common tongue a little bit more.
Yeah.
And actually explain the momentous innovation that Bitcoin is, what it means for humanity, what it means for personal freedom and sovereignty, frankly. I think it's very important, especially for people that have been economically slighted for decades and decades. So this was like my attempt at doing that, and I invite others to try and do the same. I think it's an evolving art form, and it's a very important cause. So
yeah, absolutely.
I'll kind of just run through the Cliff's Notes, and please jump in with questions as
yeah,
we go.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you take a look at the crypto asset universe, which includes Bitcoin and everything else, there's sort of two distinct hemispheres.
Right.
We have Bitcoin, which is more akin to the internet itself.
Okay.
Not many people realize this, but the internet is just a stack of open source protocols. So these are just the commons, if you will, that no single entity owns and operates. And that's what enables the internet to work.
Right.
This stack has four layers to it. And in the same way that the internet is an open set of protocols for moving information, Bitcoin can be thought of as an open set of protocols for moving value. So we can actually consider it kind of the latest layer in the internet itself. On the other side of the crypto asset universe, we have all of these little projects that have basically adopted Bitcoin's technology and software, because it's open source, it's freely available, to either try to compete directly with it, in the case of altcoins, what have you,
right?
Or to enable or disintermediate other markets, like you may have seen with predictions markets and Augur, or do, say, like decentralized lending with Maker, things
right.
like that. So in this space, there's Bitcoin, which already has sort of proven itself. It doesn't really need to change a lot. Everything else, every other altcoin, crypto asset, whatever you want to call it, we call them just alts, is essentially a venture capital style bet. Maybe 1 in 100 succeed meaningfully, possibly. But it's really very important to keep in mind that very few of these projects are subjected to any real due diligence at all. So there's a lot of shit out there.
Right.
Frankly.
Yep. Which is why we sometimes call them shitcoins.
Which is why we call them shitcoins, exactly. So then you have, looking at it through this lens, you can actually consider Bitcoin as owning a piece of the internet almost. It's like as if you could have owned a share of HTTP, a monetizable form of HTTP. That's what it represents.
Right.
It's also interesting because Bitcoin is clearly a very modern technological innovation. But you don't grasp its significance and impact by looking at the tech.
Right.
You actually have to turn backwards and look deep into history. Like, what is money? How has it evolved and changed over time? So the quick and dirty on money is, it is conceptually remain the same. It's a technology for moving value across space and time. That is the purpose of the technology, no matter what form it comes in. But throughout history, it has evolved. Ancient societies used to use stones or beads, eventually salt and cattle, and ultimately, as decided on the free market, it culminated in gold, which eventually governments, which still is basically the prime money today. All central banks all over the world hold gold and issue paper that was once backed
right.
by that gold.
Yep.
So this evolutionary process, I use the analogy and the thread of the telecommunications tech, right? In the same way that telecommunications, the singular purpose of it is to move information across right. space and time, even though the actual form has evolved over time. Like we've gone from cave paintings to carrier pigeons to the telegraph to the telephone to the smartphone, right? Anytime that the message fidelity or the reliability or the even the mobility of that technology improves, that new form of tech becomes dominant. Right, people stop using the telegraph, start using the telephone, so on and so forth. With money, it's sort of similar, except that the single characteristic that decides in a free market which form of money becomes dominant is called hardness, also called soundness. And this hardness of money is quantified. It's going to get a little nerdy here, but just stick with me. I'll try to simplify it. By a concept called the stock-to-flow ratio.
Right.
And the stock-to-flow ratio can be thought of kind of like the inverse of inflation.
Okay.
So stock is the existing supply of money.
Right.
Flow is the newly created supply.
Right.
So the higher the stock-to-flow ratio, the harder the form of money.
Right. So if the supply increases by a couple percent, like 1.5%, like gold is usually like somewhere in that range,
yes.
right? 1.5-2%. That's a low stock-to-flow ratio.
That is a high
stock-to-flow
ratio.
High stock-to-flow ratio.
Low inflation.
Low inflation.
Yes.
Got it. High stock, low
tricky.
Flow. Yeah.
Kind of a...
Got it now.
Easier way to think about it for me and some other people is if you just think of hardness as the difficulty to produce an additional unit
right.
of the monetary medium. So
right.
what is the cost to mine an ounce of gold? What is the cost to print a U.S. dollar?
Right.
What is the cost to produce a Bitcoin?
So when we say hard money in this sense, we're talking about like difficulty, really, not like the fact that it's hard or soft or whatever.
Yes.
Like a table might be hard or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Money, physicality.
It's difficult to make.
Difficulty to make, I think, is the best,
good way, to
best
do it.
Way to remember it.
Yeah.
And this is, stock to flow ratio and hardness of money is exactly why gold became dominant in the world. Gold is basically indestructible. So every ounce that's ever been mined throughout human history is still part of the existing supply.
Right.
So it has a very high stock, right?
Yep.
It is extremely scarce in the Earth's crust and expensive to extract.
Right.
So it has a very reliably low flow as well. So this gives gold the highest stock-to-flow ratio of any commodity money that we have.
Right.
And it has an interesting competitive dynamic where almost all value in the store value market flows to one, right? Because again, money is a technology with one purpose,
right.
moving value across time and space. If one form can provide that, can satisfy that, then all the value will accrete to it.
Yep.
And that's what we saw with gold.
Right.
The drawback with gold was the divisibility problem. Because gold is so rare, it's very impractical to pay for your morning coffee with gold coins.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's just, they're too valuable. So basically governments stepped in to solve this divisibility problem by right. having gold in a warehouse or in a bank, in a vault, and then issuing paper receipts for that gold. So this enabled people to transact much more conveniently and easily across space and time, but kept the form of money rooted in reality because it was backed by gold. So what happened is once you've centralized gold, the banks and governments that hold it, greed got the best of them,
right.
as it tends to do. And they eventually issued paper receipts or banknotes in excess of their reserves. And over time, finally culminating in 1971 when Nixon completely removed us from the gold standard.
Yep.
And we have just flat out fiat currency now.
Right.
It's based on literally nothing.
Yep. And we've printed a whole hell of a lot of it since 2008.
Absolutely. And since that time, the money supply has grown exponentially. We've seen inflation across the board because it's cut the roots from economic reality.
Right.
It's not rooted in economic reality. So
So it ends up being kind of like a hidden tax. So it's like a, and it decreases the value of your time over time.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. And it's a hidden tax. It's a, you know, they call it a shadow tax. It's also, frankly, it's a flat out violation of private property rights, right?
Right on.
You work hard for that money, you put it in a place, you expect it to hold its value.
Right.
And there's someone behind the scenes that can essentially extract value from you, whether it's under your mattress, in your bank, in your safe, it doesn't matter.
Right. And we've been able to see through observation that the people who benefit from the printing of this money, when the central bank or Federal Reserve decides to print a bunch of money, are the rich banks. They're getting the money cheap. Then it goes to rich corporations, and then so it's like, it's not really benefiting people. They're not like giving it out to the poor people to spend
correct.
In the economy.
Yeah. So this is there's an effect called the
Cantillon effect. Yeah.
And it's essentially what you're saying. Those that are closest to the spigot of liquidity benefit first.
Right.
Because they can print this money, they can spend it while at its maximum value, before it enters broader circulation and taxes everyone in the form of price increases.
Right.
So it is a mechanism for wealth distribution. Actually, I think Travis Kling said it well. He said quantitative easing is a universal basic income for the rich.
Boom.
So
that
it
is
really
pretty good.
Flips it on its head, and that's pretty much exactly what it is.
Yeah.
So then this fiat currency thing's got out of control. We've been printing money like no other, which actually drives the boom and bust business cycle. 2008 was just the latest incarnation of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, in the wake of 2008, this open source project called Bitcoin gets released to the world. And essentially, it is programmed to be the hardest form of money that has ever existed. It has a hard cap of 21 million units. Cannot be changed, basically, whatsoever. And every 4 years, its stock-to-flow ratio doubles. It actually increases slowly over time, but every 4 years, it actually is programmed in the algorithm to double.
Yep.
So in May 2020, on or around May 2020 next year, its stock-to-flow ratio will actually, I think it goes to 55, which is right around what gold is, and will continue to increase beyond that. And then again, around the same time in 2024, it will double again. And then we're in completely uncharted territory. We've never seen a monetary good with a stock-to-flow ratio higher than gold.
Yeah.
So kind of in a nutshell is the bet on Bitcoin is that the competitive dynamics that have always shaped money throughout all of history will continue to hold.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's a pretty good bet to make.
Yeah. It's once you see it from this perspective, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But it is so new. You know, it's just over a decade old. And it takes people a while to become familiar and comfortable with new technologies.
Yeah, man. So, yeah. Dig it. So we've spent a couple of days here talking Bitcoin, a lot of smart people around. I've talked to a lot of people who continue to blow my mind. And yeah, you are among those people. Glad to talk to you that night. It was really fun. What have you taken away from this conference? What have you been thinking about a lot during this conference?
You know, for the listeners out there, Bitcoin has gone from $3,200 bottom in December to today, you know, we're at the end of June, and it was pushing 14,000, I think, earlier today.
Yeah.
So it is on another one of its parabolic aggressive price advances, which is, you know, exciting, but It just makes you think about it a lot. So it's just been interesting timing with that. But frankly, here at the event, it has been the energy. I mean, people that are in Bitcoin are in it for what it feels like a purpose or a passion. Certainly there's, you know, an economic incentive there that drives a lot of this as well. But I think more and more people are starting to regard it as a tool for freedom. And a way to reclaim sovereignty from governments and central banks.
Yeah.
And, you know, on balance, I think, you know, Bitcoin emerging as a free market monetary alternative to literally monopoly money, you know, kind of pun intended thing. It's an enforced legal monopoly to use their fiat currency.
Right, right.
Seeing a free market alternative outcompete fiat currencies, and now that technology can be used, we think, applied to other things of value. That's kind of the digital security thesis, which we can talk about another day.
Yep.
But the long arc of human history is bending back towards freer markets. And that's really exciting.
It's beautiful, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people have been in servitude and indentured and indebted and mistreated for a long time, and this the promise of this movement represents a shift in that trajectory.
Bitcoin is freedom.
Bitcoin is freedom. Absolutely.
Man. Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
To finish up, I recorded some thoughts with my good friend Guy Swan of the Cryptoeconomy podcast. Guy was my first Bitcoin friend, the first Bitcoiner I got to know well outside of Bitcoin Twitter. It was a lot of fun to get to meet him in person and spend a lot of time together throughout the conference. Here, we're standing on the sidewalk outside our Airbnb at like 2 a.m. on the last night of the conference, just reviewing the week and talking about Bitcoin's future. We are standing outside our Airbnb in San Francisco, California. It's the end of the Bitcoin 2019 conference. We're both kind of drunk. Thank you, Peter McCormick, for the what? For the beers.
Not true.
And the whiskey.
I don't drink. I'm responsible.
Yeah, what a fucking conference, man.
Dude, oh my God, that was a fucking blast. It was literally magical. I feel like I've been upping my game on conferences. Like I went to CryptoLina, then I went to Magical Crypto Conference.
CryptoLina in Carolina, North Carolina.
Yeah, the only good thing about CryptoLina was Jeremy and Jameson. I got to hang out with the Casa crew.
All right, they rescued CryptoLina. Then
they did. There were some really nonsense.
You got to get to BitcoinLina.
Soon, I'm hoping. Fingers crossed for that.
Gotta get there.
But then we went to MCC. But this one takes the cake right now. This one's going to be the bar going forward.
Yeah.
I'm very glad that we came. Legit, thank you for the place to stay.
The last minute, man.
Dude, seriously. I was scrambling on Sunday, and we chatted about that.
We recorded a show, man.
He was like, you know, come on, man. You know, you could stay at our Airbnb, and it's like, you know, let me know. Let me know if you have the plan.
This
and
all
like,
happened because Justin Moon got sick.
It really did. Thank you, Justin Moon, for your weak immune system.
Oh shit. Oh shit. Poor Justin's getting talked shit on. He's not even here. Yeah, that's why it happened though. Because then I called Guy. I was like, "Let's do this episode. Emergency, back me up. Yep. Get my back." And he got on, and I was like, "You got to come out, man. You got
to
come out."
You were the last one for. Aren't you going to the conference? Right? Yeah. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
And so I gotta bite the bullet and just have it happen.
Made it happen, man.
Yeah.
Got to meet so many amazing Bitcoiners. God, and you know, shit, man. These people were so cool. So kind, so genuine, so approachable. Every single person. Like, there was not a single person that was... I mean, Adam Back. Just hanging out. Like
Adam Back is the biggest sweetheart in the world.
Amazing. Right? except for maybe Pierre Rochard, who is actually like he gets...
That's true.
I mean, that dude is fucking amazing. So genuine, so cool. Wow.
Pierre like, is
I was
such
impressed
a nice,
by that guy.
Pierre is such a... just he's just like a golden boy. It's as soon as like... he was super nice at the Lightning Workshop, and that was my first actually meeting him. But he's nothing but smiles and like happy to meet everybody.
Marty
like,
and Matt, nothing, cool. Nothing. I mean, just like
I barely got to hang out. Barely got to hang out with Marty and Matt, but I'm glad I got to say hey and chill for just a minute. I got to have another good talk with Aaron Von Wertheim. I really want to have him on the show soon, hopefully.
Stefan Levera, man.
Stefan!
He's the man.
Oh my God, Stefan. Yes.
He's absolutely the man. And
I got to meet him finally. I had yet to speak to him in person until here. That was a good one. Who else did we talk to at El Rio? God, that was a good night. I drank too much. I forgot most of it. Oh man. Anthony.
We met Christy, the editor of
Bitcoin
Magazine.
Christy and Andrew.
Very cool.
Andrew Fleming. Yep. Yes. Oh my God, dude! Everything Bitcoin Magazine is
the guys
doing
from
right
Wasabi.
Now. Wasabi, Aviv.
Aviv.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. We got to hang out with those guys. Everything Bitcoin Magazine is doing right now, like I'm super excited about.
Yeah.
Like the fact that they put this whole thing together just kind of blows my mind.
Jack Mahler's is amazing. I spent like an hour hanging out with his parents tonight, you know, like at Peter McCormick's party. Thanks again, Peter. That was great, man.
Yeah, seriously. That,
oh, and you know, shout out Dropbit for, you know, fronting the whole thing. And lots of,
oh, was that Dropbit?
I think it was Dropbit that sponsored the party.
Oh, nice. Yeah, nice. Yeah, those guys are killing it right now.
Yeah.
Actually, hung out at their booth for a little while, chatted with the Dropbit guys.
Nice. Noddle guys.
Dude, like, Noddle. They were my ballers. Totem. They were my totem.
They're absolute ballers.
Every time I got exhausted, I hung out with them and like Pura Vida. Like I would just go to their booth and I would just sit down and I'd be like, all right, I'm going to chill here for a minute. And
they'd
be
like, recharge. All right. Jeremy Welch, we saw him tonight, man, from Casa.
Yeah, where was he at the conference?
I didn't see him much at the conference, but.
He wasn't. He said he just showed up for the party. At the last, that was it. Yeah. He just came into town to have the party.
Like you do, you know? What were some of the best speeches you saw?
That was the funny thing,
panels, whatever.
I saw one with Stefan Olivera when I don't even remember the name. It was the first one that he did because I missed the second one. And then I saw one with Aaron Von Wertheim. Oh, good Lord. They were about Bitcoin. I literally missed. I have to go back and watch all of these on YouTube because I genuinely missed like at least 3/4 of the talks.
Well, yeah, I was
like, I mean, I was out just talking and networking.
When you're here, you come to these conferences not because like the panels are going to be on the web. Mm-hmm. So when you come here and you pay the money to travel and buy the ticket and everything, the value is in walking around and meeting people in person.
Yeah, I would get stuck in a conversation then we'd be talking like Alex. Alex from Lolly.
Yeah.
Like Alex Edelman. That guy runs a mile a minute. Like that guy was like on like just running and I was like, "Oh my god." And we talked for like, I don't know, an hour.
We got to shout out another Alex, man. Alex Svetsky. That guy is just incredible, man.
Svetsky.
What an amazing dude.
Svetsky is amazing.
Yeah.
Svetsky kills me.
Yeah, man.
I can't believe, like, it was crazy to meet. It's amazing how many people, like, that were just Twitter logos for, like, 30 people that were just nothing but Twitter logos. And it's like, oh, like, here you are in real life, and let's have a conversation. And Brecky, listen to Brecky's Rick and Morty live killed me. At the open node was hilarious.
Yeah, all the dudes from Open Node, man, were pretty fun to hang out with.
Yeah, I got to chat with the Open Node guys. I got to chat with two guys from Kraken. I wish I could remember so many names.
The Snowden this morning was amazing, man. Like
I missed it. From like 5 or 6 people that was like really, really good. And
I was
distraught that I didn't get there till like 10 o'clock.
Massive standing ovation at the end.
Really?
Which damn he was it. Like he like blushed and was embarrassed. Like I was like, you know, that guy being shunned by his home country, getting massive love. Like there was, you know, over a minute, probably 2 minutes standing ovation.
No kidding.
Just I must feel good.
There is no. It's hard to imagine that cost.
Yeah.
Like, particularly for what you believe in.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, I truly think that's why, like, 95% of us are here is because of what we believe in. And there is nobody that proved it as much as that fucking guy.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
I feel like I believe it to my core, but, like, that would tear my whole world apart to think that that was the cost that I had to pay for it.
Thinking about doing what he did and just, you know, knowing the consequences, the potential consequences, and like basically what he's achieved is probably the best case scenario, which is not that great for him.
Legit, yeah, seriously, you know? Like it could be a hell of a lot worse. God, that's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Well, on a similar level, Lynn Ulbricht. Gave a speech on the P2P stage, and I was down there, and I was fortunate enough to speak with her for a little bit, and that was hard. Like,
I did not get to speak to Lynn, which sucks. I really did want to talk to her. I didn't see her after that. Look at the Silk Road 2.0.
If you look at, he got like, nothing. And if you look at other similar convictions, there was a slide of like another dozen similar convictions. Nothing more than 10 years, and he got 2 lifetimes plus 40.
And how long has he been in already? Seven?
Yeah.
Like, just...
And he's in, like, max security prisons and shit. Yeah. I mean, it's a joke.
It's a joke.
It's a total joke.
Like...
It's a travesty of justice.
It would be hilarious if it wasn't so devastating.
Go to freeross.org, donate some money, sign the petition. It's terrible.
Yep, anybody who's listened to me has not signed a petition, you suck. You got to do it right now.
Right? They're at like 180,000 signatures. Lynn told me today that she wants to get to 500K. So we got some work to do.
We got really heavy
moments. But yeah, all in all, like, you know, we're on the verge of something massive, and I have been feeling, since we talked on Sunday and got just super bullish at the end of that episode, you know, just like, I've been feeling that we're on the verge of an inflection point in the S curve of adoption.
The last 20 years included, but the next 20, even more potently, one of the biggest shifts in just civilization, just like how things are organized, how, like, what degree of control people have over their own lives,
yeah,
like what the idea of liberty is and what it means to be sovereign,
yeah,
like the sovereign individual, that book, I still haven't finished it, but I'm about a third of the way through it, and it keeps getting better. So,
yeah.
And it keeps ringing truer and truer. And it's phenomenal how much Bitcoin applies to exactly that possibility to where we're headed in the future. And I think we're seeing something that's just like on a scale of millennia is one of the most important shifts in just humanity that we've ever seen.
Yeah, like, the pendulum is swinging back toward individual liberty, and I think that started hundreds of years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think democracy was a big step forward in that regard.
Oh yeah, have you ever read the 5,000 Year Leap?
No.
Ooh, you got to read that one.
Yeah,
you got to read that one. Okay. It's about how the idea of really the idea of individual liberty and the idea of a republic that puts the individual ahead of the state was an absolute breakthrough. And
yeah, when I said democracy, I should have said republic, I think.
Yeah,
yeah,
but is
yeah.
That like all of modern society is just a almost like an echo of that just extending.
Yeah.
You gotta read the 5,000 Year Leap.
Yeah,
you gotta dig into that one.
Yeah, I think Bitcoin is like a continuation of this move toward individual freedom.
Yeah,
that we've been experiencing for a while now. And
yeah.
And the idea of, you know, I'm not against a state. I'm not in the sense of, like, you know, regulations and common sense, like laws and justice and the seeking of truth in society and enforcing morality.
I think those are staples of humanity,
yeah.
Like of just wanting to interact with others. Like,
right.
Like it's a consequence of being with other people.
The pendulum is swung toward this, you know, toward centralization of control, of justice and of money to such an extreme that, you know, Bitcoin's going to pull it back toward the middle and balance things again.
It takes such a powerful tool out of the hands of essentially a poorly directed, like Bitcoin, well, just money in general. Money is such a
fundamental.
It's when we put our lives, our labor, and our time on the line for what we think about the world or what our vision of the world is.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I go to work or I like put my time into something that I think is valuable, that's the vision of the world that I'm trying to make. And my expenditure of capital or money is in the direct like creation of that, you know? I think it's the ultimate form of free speech because it's cheap to say things,
mm-hmm.
but it is not cheap to put your money where your mouth is.
One of the absolute highlights of this week for me was getting to meet you in person, dude.
Yeah, Yeah, dude. It's we've not. Give me a hug.
Bring it in. Bring it in. Bring it in. Yeah, man.
Dude, this is
great.
Absolute blast. Thank you for the housing.
You're welcome, dude. Of course.
What a conference. Thank you to Bitcoin Magazine and BTC Media for putting this on. This
Christian, dude. Christian,
absolutely
CK.
Christian. I got to meet Christian. I got to meet Christy, Andrew, David. I got to meet David and Graham from the Bitcoin Magazine podcast.
Awesome, man.
Dude.
You guys killed it, dude. That conference is amazing. Well done.
Seriously.
Hats off. We'll be here next year.
It's in March, right?
Is that what she said on the way out? Yeah.
It's not even. They don't even give me 12 months to prepare.
It's gonna be in March, huh?
I gotta change my schedule. I'm sure I have something planned for March. It's my birthday month, so
nice. We'll celebrate it out here, man.
All right, man.
All right, let's go to bed.
Yes, let's do that. All right, guys. Out.
Out.
All right. Guy and I were a little saucy there. We got into the I love you, man. Bitcoin's going to save the world territory, getting a little cosmic thanks to the beer and whiskey. But it was a lot of fun to wrap up the conference that way. Let us know what you guys thought on Twitter. I'm at Citizen Bitcoin. You can tag all these folks as well. If you have been enjoying the podcast, getting a lot out of it, I would really appreciate it if you'd rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you can rate and review the pod. If you can't do that, just sharing it on Bitcoin Twitter, sharing an episode with a comment on a thought you had to contribute is a massive way to support the show. So thanks to all of you who take time to do that. It's really important to me, and I really do appreciate it. All right, that's it for this week. Take care out there, Bitcoiners, wherever you happen to be in the world.